Good afternoon to you all. Welcome to all of you joining us on the Cybercast. Down?
Good.
That's good? Okay. Hope you can see me there on the Cybercast on this beautiful Sabbath day. Well, it's great to be fellowshipping with you in Fort Worth on this beautiful day. I will have absolutely nothing to say concerning the national political crisis that we are in. I let those issues rot my mind all week long, and I've decided to give my mind a Sabbath rest from all of that. So you will hear nothing from me about any of that. I still don't see Mr. Hooser here. Don Hooser is scheduled to give the sermon today, but he has notified his Jim that he's stuck in that traffic that's out there. So I'll try to speak very slow while I give this sermon. He did send me a note last night and said that I'm welcome to go a little overtime if I want to. And I'm glad he did, because I was just about to sit down and try to whittle some of the material out of this. I knew it was too long, but thankfully, it seems like my device is locking up, but it's a good thing I come with a paper backup. Well, let me begin today by turning to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and 1 Corinthians the 6th chapter, and as you're turning there, let me ask you a question. How many people here own their own business? I think there are a few that do. The Stewarts, does Scott have his own business? I know Dan Hines has his own business. Eric, do you own, is it your own business? Yeah, so let me ask you a question. And you can just either nod or shake your head, yes or no. But in your decision to start your own business, were you ever given that piece of advice by any church members? You know, well-meaning church members, I'm sure. But were you ever given the advice to avoid going into business or getting into any complex dealings with fellow church members? Did any of you ever receive that advice? I'm seeing someone nodding their head. Whatever you do, don't go into business with the brethren. You know, have you heard that before? And of course, for a new guy in the church, like I was at one time, the idea didn't quite sit very well with me. That just didn't sound right. Why would we avoid doing business with the brethren? It seemed to me like they would be the most ideal people to do business with. And the answer is because the Bible forbids you from suing fellow church members if things go wrong. So the idea is that if you get cheated by your brothers or sisters in God's church, you have no legal recourse. You can't protect yourself. You're vulnerable, you're exposed, and that's just simply not wise business practices. So what do you think of that advice? Does that sound logical to you? I suppose there is some logic to that. If you can't sue your brethren, you know, best to avoid any entanglements that might lead to political potential lawsuits. Did I just say political? See, that's messing with my mind all week long. But potential lawsuits. Well, again, I suppose there's some logic to all that. But as a brand new church member, you know, when I tended to look at things a little more binary, things just seemed so very black and white to me back then. In terms of right and wrong, you know, I just found that whole argument to be plain absurd. The idea that church members shouldn't conduct business with each other simply because they can't sue each other when things go wrong, that just seems like, in my opinion, the strangest idea I've ever encountered in the church. And by the church, of course, I don't mean official church doctrine or anything like that. Of course, the church doesn't teach such nonsense. What I mean by the strangest idea I've ever encountered in the church is just that I happen to hear it in a conversation with maybe one or two church members, you know, likely business owners who may have been burned a time or two in their business dealings. You know, I don't really remember who I heard it from, but it's probably been decades since I've heard that. But I've heard it more than once. I know that. So I know that the idea has had some traction with church members in the past. Let's look at what the Bible says regarding this subject. Do you think God is really going to leave a person, a member of his church, with no legal recourse for their grievances? That they just have to be vulnerable with each other all the time and not be able to experience justice and a sense of fairness? Well, let's find out. And let's begin in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. You've already turned there, because I'm certain that's where this idea has come from. Of course, the most controversial ideas always come from misunderstanding the Apostle Paul, don't they? So that's where we'll begin. And I think you'll see as we read this that this isn't something that I would categorize as Paul's hard-to-understand writings. You know, I think it's pretty straightforward and clear what he says here, but let's see what you think. We'll start reading in verse 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 through 8. Dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to law before the unrighteous and not before the saints? Do you not know that the saints will judge the world? And if the world will be judged by you, are you unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Do you not know that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life? If then you have judgments concerning things pertaining to this life, do you appoint those who are least esteemed by the church to judge? I say this to your shame. Is it so that there is not a wise man among you, not even one, who will be able to judge between his brethren? But brother goes to law against brother, and that before unbelievers. Now, therefore, it is already an utter failure for you that you go to law against one another. Why do you not rather accept wrong? Why do you not rather let yourself be cheated? No, you yourselves do wrong and cheat, and you do these things to your brethren. Now, if you have a King James Version or maybe a New King James Version, you probably have the subtitles in your Bibles that were added in by the translators. Here in my New King James Version, the section is subtitled, Do Not Sue the Brethren. So at least we know where that idea came from, right? Well, let's look at this passage a little more closely. First of all, Paul is not saying we as church members have no avenue for justice when we have grievances. He's saying that we ought to judge our matters inside the church and not outside with unbelieving judges and magistrates. Now think about this. How much more ideal would it be if all of our business was conducted with church members inside the church so that when things go wrong, we can take our grievances to the church and have it settled? What happens when we go to the courts outside the church? Well, first of all, Paul states here that you're allowing yourselves to be judged by the unrighteous. You're allowing yourself to be judged by unbelievers. He calls them the least esteemed. And more often than not, that doesn't go very well. Secondly, it costs a lot of money to get justice in our court system today. Always when we go to court to settle our grievances, there's some form of monetary compensation that's involved, always. It's not about fixing the disagreement. It's about milking money out of the people that are trying to settle their score. There are court costs, there are attorney's fees. The whole thing is a scam. It's not about justice and righteousness at all. Now, you may get justice out of your lawsuit, but that's probably incidental. The goal is to get money. And I think the standard practice is that an attorney will plan to take one-third of whatever money is won in a lawsuit. And I'm not attacking attorneys. I understand that without attorneys, the average person would likely gain nothing for their grievances. So attorneys do provide a service, but they do so at a price. And judging by the lifestyle of many attorneys, I think it's a pretty hefty price that they charge. I'll give you an example of something that happened to me since I owned my own business. I wasn't in business with a church member. And someone might say, well, that's fortunate because you didn't have to get nasty with the brethren. It's just some worldly person, right? I can get all kinds of carnal on that person, right? Well, it was not fortunate in this situation. It was actually quite unfortunate. Had it been a church member, I think things could have gone much differently. When I was early in establishing my business, I had someone offer to sell me their customer list. The fellow had moved out of the area, and he was trying to manage his business remotely. So he was setting up jobs, he was sending guys out to work the job, and then he was splitting the commission, which was working just fine for a time. But things weren't going so well for him, so he decided to sell his customer list and shut down the business. And so we came to an agreement, and I decided, yes, I would like to buy your list. So we had a contract drawn up and notarized, a notarized contract. And on that contract, it stated explicitly that he was to not attempt to keep the business alive after he sold me the business. It was stated specifically that he couldn't even work in the industry for 10 years in five adjoining counties. So Tarrant County, Rockwall, Dallas, Collin, and Denton counties. So now, certainly I would not have held him to that. You know, if he had decided to go out and drum up some new business, you know, I can't possibly take all the business in all five of those counties. So I didn't really have a problem with that, but that's what the contract stated. He wasn't allowed to conduct business for 10 years. But he especially wasn't allowed to solicit from the customer list that he sold me. Now that I was determined to hold him to, because he had sold me a list and a customer list. And certainly that for him to try to go and solicit those same customers, well, that would have been an absolute grievance of our contract. And that's exactly what he started doing. I would call a customer on the list only to have them tell me, well, Tom was just here a week ago, you know, or 2 weeks ago or whatever. So he was actually going out and doing, so he had a copy of the list and he was going to do the work from this list that he'd already sold me. And it was clear that he was doing this. I had to confront him several times about it. You know, you need to stop doing this. And then he would just deny it. No, I'm not doing that. So finally, I just decided I had to get some legal advice. And what the attorney told me was very demoralizing. He told me that I indeed had a case against the person. You know, most likely there was a case there and I would win. But he told me very matter-of-factly that even if I did win, I would probably end up losing. Because if the business is belly up, likely the fellow has no resources to file suit over. You can't sue someone that doesn't have any money. Or perhaps you can, you're just not going to get anything out of it. So it isn't about justice, it's not about making things right, it's about not being able to sue someone that doesn't have any money. And if the guy's without money, if there's no money to sue for, then what's the point? It can't be about justice. Certainly that can't be the reason that we would go to court. And the attorney told me that even if I win, if the fellow has no money, I'll end up paying for the court fees. I'll end up paying for the attorney's fees. I'll end up winning the case and losing money. Well, that didn't make much sense for me. How much better would it have been if I could just go before the church and have our grievances settled in a fair and just way without any money involved at all? Just a good and honest attempt by reputable church members filled with God's Holy Spirit to render a judgment. But that would mean we would need to view the church as a body with real authority. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 16. Should we view the church as having real authority with the power to render legally binding judgments? And I don't mean legal in the sense of this world. Again, that's what Paul stated emphatically. Stay away from that system of justice. It's just full of people that are unconverted, they're the unrighteous. So don't even settle your grievances that way. So I mean legal in the sense of what's morally binding, how God would view things. Let the church of God be the true arbiters of justice and judgments. Can we do that? Maybe that's the problem. Maybe with certain church members who found themselves in situations of grievances, they were told they couldn't go to the courts to sue the brethren, but then they didn't take their case before the church to render a binding judgment. Now, if that's the problem, if we don't view the church as having that kind of authority within our social network of what we call God's church, well, then we're left with a void. We are truly vulnerable. Let's start reading in verse 18 of Matthew 16. Matthew 16 and verse 18. And I also say to you that you are Peter. This is Jesus Christ speaking to Simon Peter. I say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of the grave shall not prevail against it. And I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Now, what do you suppose Jesus meant by this? Well, we know what the Catholics teach. This is the coronation of the Pope. You know, this is the primacy of Peter, to have all the authority on earth to act as the vicar of Christ. And they use that authority to change God's laws. You know, the Sabbath is changed from the seventh day of the week to the first day of the week because all authority is given to the church to make those changes. No, this isn't what Jesus is talking about here. He's talking about the power to bind and loose as to what the Pharisees and the Sadducees had who sat in Moses' seat. The power to render judgment within the confines of God's law. Moses didn't create new law. The seat of Moses was pass judgment on applications within God's law. God created the law. Moses just passed judgments on those laws. The power was transferred by Jesus Christ to the church. Again, are we willing to come before the church to settle our grievances? And then accept the judgment, just as we would have had to do in ancient Israel when judgment was passed down to the seat of, from the seat of Moses. Well, let's notice this further just over in Matthew 18, just two chapters over. Matthew chapter 18. This is conflict resolution here in Matthew 18. We know this passage well, but we see here that church members are not left in a void without any recourse for justice and to settle their grievances. There is a process here that the church should be abiding by. Let's notice Matthew 18 and verse 15. Moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not hear, take with you one or two more, that, quote, by the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. So you bring forth witnesses to the grievance, and just like you would in a court of law. And if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the church. But if he refuses even to hear the church, let him beat you like a heathen and a tax collector. Assuredly, I say to you, whatever you bind, notice this, assuredly, I say to you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Do you see how we're able to see a little more context around the notion of the church having the power of binding and loosing? It's talking about rendering legally binding judgments on issues of grievances between members of God's church. This is how I would want my case to be heard. Imagine having a case requiring you to go to the court system. You know, you're in the midst of unbelievers. They don't seek righteousness. You know, Paul calls them the unrighteous. You risk losing enormous amounts of money and beyond the net value of the case being heard. Or imagine that you could take your grievances before a panel of God-fearing, spirit-filled brethren who know both you and the person that you're dealing with, that you're in conflict with. They know you intimately. It's the church community. There are witnesses to the case. You have witnesses. You have to bring forth two or three witnesses. You can't just do hearsay or he said, she said. You know, you have to have witnesses. So if you're gonna have business dealings with brethren, you ought to have witnesses, just like you would when me and my wife got married, we had witnesses. We entered into a legally binding contract. We signed a contract called our marriage license. It's a legally binding contract. Why couldn't we do that with members within the church when we're conducting business? To me, that would be the way to go. And in that scenario, then, given a choice of who I would want to conduct business with, I think I would prefer church members. No, I don't accept that bit of advice I received years ago that stated, whatever you do, don't conduct business with church members. I think if Paul would have heard that, if Jesus Christ would have heard that, they would have said, wow, you know, I think you really missed the point of what I was talking about there. Now, after all of this, you may still insist, yes, but I think it's a bad idea to get involved in complex business dealings with church members and with family members. I just don't want that kind of burden if things go wrong, and to have that level of tension between people that I love over business. And certainly that is your prerogative. You know, Dave Ramsey says it's a bad idea. You know, he says don't do it. And, you know, I'll have to concede, Dave knows a little bit more about business than I do, and what it can do to family and friends and church brethren. But that's not what this sermonette is about. It's not about, it's about what the scriptures say and what they do not say about having a just and fair recourse in dealing with grievances between church members. And of course, you have to understand that men like Dave Ramsey live within the confines of Protestant Christianity. In Protestantism, and perhaps in most, if not all, modern Christian congregations, including our own church culture, the church simply doesn't operate with that sort of authority to render civil judgments like that. We just don't live in a world like that. And if that be the case, if the church is just here to offer fellowship and with some inspired biblical guidance, you know, from the lectern, And if we don't use it the way the Apostle Paul stated there in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, or the authority that Jesus Christ granted the church there in the Gospel of Matthew, if we don't use it in that way, then we really only have two choices. We can totally ignore Paul's stinging rebuke and go to the worldly courts to settle our differences, or we can avoid business dealings with our brethren and our loved ones. We can do that. I prefer the option where we settle our grievances as mature, spirit-led Christians within the confines of God's church. And towards the end of that passage, Paul tells us, you know, why not be willing to just take it on the chin? Why not allow yourself to be wronged? Why not allow yourself to be taken advantage of? I think that's called forgiving your brother. You know, that's settling the score one-on-one. Step one of the Matthew 18 principle. Go to your brother and you settle it between you and him alone. You don't even have to get judges and, you know, magistrates involved. You know, just settle it together. Even if it means you saying, you know what, I'm just going to forgive you and let it slide. I think that's the better approach than avoiding business dealings with the brethren at all. And of course, that's just my opinion. By the way, the conclusion of my story. How did I settle that situation with that guy that was trying to fraud me after selling me his business? He ended up going to prison for armed bank robbery. Problem solved. But hey, at least I wasn't conducting business with a church member.